Is the learning in your school competency-based? Is it personalized? Is it happening anytime, anywhere? Is it student-owned? In other words, is the learning student-centered? And are all students learning more deeply, more equitably, and becoming career and college ready? If you have these questions, want to know what the research says about them, and are trying to figure out how to implement these ideas in your classrooms and schools, you've come to the right place. Thank you for listening to the Student-Centered Learning Podcast. I'm your host, Arthur Barriff, and I've been a principal and teacher in student-centered schools for over 17 years, and I can't wait to share a story or interview that will help you help your students. I'm here today with Jennifer Fredericks, one of the students at the Center, Distinguished Fellows, a professor at Connecticut College, and one of the leading experts on student engagement. And she's published a book a couple years ago called 8 Myths of Student Disengagement, Creating Classrooms of Deep Learning. Thanks, Jenny, for coming on to the podcast.
Oh, thank you. Nice to be here.
I'd love for all of us to read your entire book, but give us a sense of one of the 8 myths that you talk about in the book.
First, to give a little bit of context for why I wrote this book, I'm a researcher and I study what is student engagement, how do we create more engaging classrooms. And we actually know a lot of these things, but that research often isn't reaching teachers, and much of practice is based not on research. So the goal of this book was really to say, how can we translate research in a way that is accessible to teachers? Two of my co-authors are teachers who shared a lot of scenarios and examples. There's a lot of practical how-to. What does this mean for the classroom? So it really has a research base, but written in a way that is useful to teachers. I framed it around 8 myths, and these are things I often hear from teachers. I also train teachers. And I use the book to really deconstruct some of those myths and think about what that would mean for your classroom based on research. I also weave different cases throughout the book. So I talk about strategies will differ depending on the case. So I talk about a fully engaged child. And by fully engaged, that's a child that's behaviorally, emotionally, and cognitively engaged. Those are easy kids to teach. Then a very common profile we see in classrooms is kids who are behaviorally engaged. So they do school, they participate, they look like they're on task.
Conscientious.
Exactly. But they're often very bored and not really interested in learning. And they use very superficial strategies so they can pass a test and they can finish the work, but that will not lead to deep learning. So I look at that case and what you do with that kind of student. And then finally, a child who is disengaged in all three areas. And there's different strategies you would use for each of those kids. So that's kind of the premise of the book. For sake of this discussion, would like to talk about one of the myths, which is hands-on is minds-on.
Why did you pick that one?
Well, so that is a chapter that really deals with how do you structure tasks to be more engaging. And I think there's an assumption by teachers that doing hands-on tasks that are relevant, that are interesting, that are, you know, an emphasis on the fun and the motivational aspect, that will lead to learning. And you need the motivational piece, but that's not enough. So I think I wrote the book to really say, well, what are the cognitive pieces that need to be there? And what do we need to do to support students? What social skills do students need to be successful in these classrooms? What cognitive skills? And how can we structure these tasks so it actually does lead to deep learning? So that was the real premise of the chapter.
So you're thinking of a teacher who might be very skilled at designing tasks that will hook the students, will
exactly.
grab their interest. The
exactly.
students will immediately say, this is something I want to do.
Exactly.
They've attended to that motivational piece.
Yes.
But then the work doesn't really reach any level of academic rigor.
Exactly.
Or cognitive challenge.
Right. So they hook, but they don't keep.
Yeah.
So the hook is the first thing.
Yeah.
To give an example, I spent a whole year in a project-based science classroom, observing that classroom. And that was sort of when project-based science was starting. And these students had really interesting things they were doing with technology. It was really fun. It was really exciting. But unless that teacher was asking the right questions, they were not learning science because there was so much focus on the fun part of the task. And so it really required a very skilled teacher to intervene, ask questions, scaffold learning to make sure that interest leaded to learning.
So in your research, what did you find were some of those cognitive supports and social-emotional strategies that the teacher used in conjunction with the motivational aspects to make the task both engaging but also rigorous and deep?
Yeah, well, first I want to highlight some of the things that teachers do that sometimes reduce the cognitive complexity. Before we talk about what. So often there is a focus on the right answer rather than an emphasis on meaning and understanding. They don't give adequate time to students. They don't prep students with the social skills that are necessary for effective group work and really model those social skills. They don't help students learn to become metacognitive, which is thinking about their thinking. So you can do probes where you ask students to really reflect on their thinking, but without modeling that, we can't assume that students know how to do that. The task is really actually not open-ended. It doesn't require multiple ways to solve a problem, so the design of the task isn't really sufficient. There's also sometimes a focus on relative performance, so how does that student do relative to their peers, rather than a focus on mastery and learning. And so students are then focused on different aspects of the task. So it's really key in how they set up the task, the adequate time. Oh, and another thing is teachers often don't provide students with the prior knowledge they need to be able to be successful at the task. So sometimes that requires, in terms of content, getting the content to that student in a way, a task that really builds on what they know. So if students don't have the prior skills or knowledge, don't know how to effectively work in groups, don't know how to effectively self-regulate and plan and organize their thinking, the best task is not going to be successful. So that really requires a lot of planning. There is often an assumption I hear from student-centered, approaches to learning that you let the students do their own thing. And there's a teacher-directed and the student-directed, and these two dichotomies. And that's not true. I mean, student-centered requires that the teacher takes on a very different role, but is still a very important, they're the facilitator, they're the coach, they're the scaffolder, they're asking questions, they are intervening, It requires this co-construction of knowledge with the student and the teacher. And that is much harder to do. And often teachers just assume, I have the task, let students do it. And that's not going to lead to necessarily the kind of deep learning we need.
Great. So let's talk about an example. Can you illustrate what this would look like when done the right way?
Okay, so when done the right way is, the task should be open-ended. There should be multiple ways to solve that task. But the teacher should do a lot of prep work before that task happens. So,
could we take an example of a task you've seen?
Well, I mean, so I spent a lot of time in a science classroom, project-based science. So I think that's a model that's very effective, that students ask a question that they investigate over a project. Now, the question has to be scientifically relevant, so helping students ask a good question is a really important role for a teacher. So just because it's personally interesting is not enough. It has to be a scientifically important question. And then helping students to design and collect data to investigate this question. And then figuring out how to analyze that data and figuring out how to present that data to hopefully a larger audience than just the teacher. So it's taking the scientific inquiry approach and building it in steps. But at each of those steps, the teacher plays a critical role, both in helping ask the question, in helping set up the scaffold and break down into small steps of what you do to design an experiment, helping them in how they collect data. There should be multiple times for them to get feedback and reflection, both from the teacher and their peers. And then they will need help in how to interpret what this data means. So it goes beyond the fun parts of the task, which often are what are going to get the student initially there, but that doesn't mean they're going to learn science content. So if we really want students to learn science content and learn, really how to be deep thinkers, it has to go beyond, that it's fun. And I saw that in this classroom, they were very into their PowerPoints and they're very into the technology and very interested in what it looked like. And in one case, the teacher didn't do enough scaffolding and we weren't really getting that deep learning.
So what other advice would you have for teachers who are designing tasks, thinking of how to prepare students to be successful in those tasks? Any other words of wisdom?
Well, I think it's really key to model strategies and cognitive strategy use. I think one of the challenges that teachers often face is they think some kids can't do this. They don't either have the social skills, They don't have the self-control skills. They have behavioral issues, so they're not able to manage their, you know, be able to plan. And I mean, I think some of those fears are real, but that doesn't mean that you shouldn't spend time modeling with those students. You have to be very careful about how you group students. Some of those students are going to require a little bit more support than other students, but that shouldn't be a reason that you don't allow students off the access to these opportunities, because there is a lot of ways to teach students to be how to be more self-regulative and think about their own thinking. So the key is really to get students to think, why did I do this? What should I do next? Was that a good choice? And if it wasn't a good choice, what should I? And so that has that you can do that both behaviorally, but also in terms of cognitive thinking. I really encourage teachers to not think that some students aren't capable of this kind of work, but know that some students are going to require a lot more scaffolding and a lot more modeling. And there may be, you know, smaller type projects with those students, but don't think that they can't do it just because maybe they have had behavioral issues.
So the myth, hands-on is not minds-on,
yeah,
means that because a task is something students can do in the form of a project that's interesting to them, doesn't mean they're going to be engaged cognitively or supported social-emotionally,
right,
and with those collaboration skills needed to be successful in learning deeply.
Yes. I mean, I think you may get their motivation and you may get them more interested. And that, I honestly, that's the first step and that's important. And you still need to think about the motivational features and how can it be interesting to kids? How can it be relevant in their world? How can it answer problems that really matter? That's key. Even that's necessary. But I've seen too many teachers who stop at that point,
yeah,
and forget about the what is cognitively necessary to go to the next level. So motivation is part of it, but it's not enough.
And if you provide those supports, they'll stay engaged through the less fun parts.
You hope, yeah. You hope. I mean, and I think, it requires a lot of scaffolding. It requires a lot of monitoring. I think you will get them engaged more of the time, and you will get them to deeper learning.
That's a great place to land. So there are 7 more myths to debunk and learn more about. Where can folks go to learn more, and can you remind us of the title of your book?
Yes, thank you. The title of my book is 8 Myths of Student Disengagement, Creating Classrooms of Deep Learning. It is published by Corwin Press, and I know it's available on Amazon if you look up either the title or look up by my last name, which is Frybrooks.
Well, continue doing this great research and work, and we look forward to hearing more from you, Jenny.
Great. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you again for listening to the Student Centered Learning Podcast. Let us know what you think about this episode or what you tried in your school by commenting on our Facebook page. You can also subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher, and please leave a rating so others can find us. You can also follow us on Twitter at STUCNTR Podcast. And remember, students learn deeply when they are at the center.